Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Carl Mack. Welcome back to Combat Chronicles. And it's all about boxing today. It's been boxing heavy this week. Boxing episode on a Patreon. Got a boxing day on this episode. Just a little quick one. Three title fights to talk about. Some more than others. Certainly going to start off with a cruiserweight title fight that I wasn't really looking forward to. Guess kind of really didn't enjoy for long stretches. But I've come away feeling pretty positive about. Lawrence Okolie, well beaten by decision. More on that in a minute. By Chris Billum-Smith. Fight was just down the road from me. About half an hour drive. Didn't go. Thank fuck, because there was absolute carnage in the stands most of the night. I think that's why I bumped into Billy Joe Saunders in my native Southampton the other week, because I think he's down here. I think he's maybe part of Chris Billum-Smith's camp or someone's camp. Not sure. He's involved with someone for sure. But yeah, Chris Billum-Smith, I thought, won clearly. The fight was not easy on the eyes for some of it. Billum-Smith did a good job of occupying Okolie, you know, doubling up, tripping up his jab, just keeping it in front of him, not always landing it, but just always giving him something to think about. Was able to walk him onto left hands. And Okolie, who is just known as this octopus, this horrible clinch fight, he's so long. He's a really good puncher, Okolie. I don't mean in terms of power, although he does have some good raw power. He makes Henry Akin one day look like fucking Arturo Gatti, I guess. He said after the fight, you know, I had some good moments, but I smothered my work. He always smothers his work. He punches into clinches and not really to work. He is just constantly grabbing hold of his opponent. He does it all the time. To see the reaction on Twitter last night, it was like, oh, this is quite a big fight on Sky. It's on a decent time. Feels like more people than ever are watching Lawrence Okolie, even though he was a sort of top amateur. I think he was Olympian, but he definitely fought in the World Series of Boxing, and you know, he's a mainstay of Team GB for years. Feels like more people than ever last night seemed to realise how fucking tedious he is to watch. As the fight wore on, though, Billum-Smith was able to sort of just create enough separation and clip Okolie with shots. And Okolie, when he's hurt, he just has sort of fall over. This happened against Erislandy Savon in the World Series of Boxing. I actually posted a clip last night. If he gets hurt, he'll grab hold of you. If you keep hitting him while he grabs hold of you, he just sort of falls down to the floor. Really awful in terms of optics. He just didn't want to. He didn't want to stay up, and he didn't want to get hit. So he'd grab hold, and then if you're still hitting him when he grabs hold, he just sort of stumbles to the floor. We talk about the stumbles to the floor. The first knockdown was real clean left hook as he was sort of turning away from the shot, and just sort of Billum-Smith just walked him into the left hook and splattered him, and he was badly hurt. Okolie. I've got to give Okolie a bit of credit, though. He did really try and hard to fight back at times. It's like when it seemed like it was all but lost for him, and we're going to talk about why in a second, he did still manage to land some really big shots, banging them off of Chris Billum-Smith's chin. The new champion really did wear them shots well. There was a couple of times where he looked like his knees just dipped for a second. He just ploughed forward. That looks good for optics as well. You know, that's going to take the edge off it a bit. Matter of fact, I think in the 10th round, maybe only a 10-9, because Okolie landed some really big shots in that round, if I remember correctly, even though he was dropped. And that was somewhat of as one of these messy knockdowns. Maybe it was only a 10-9, maybe it was still a 10-8. And that's what we're going to talk about now. 2-point deductions for the clinching, very happy to say so. Not sure if it would have happened anywhere other than Bournemouth, where Chris Billum-Smith is based. But he did indeed, even as champion, get 2 points taken off of him, Lawrence Okolie. And officially knocked down three times. So there's 5 points straight away. How the fuck have we got a scorecard of 1-1-2, 1-1-2? That suggests, with the 5-point deductions, a scorecard of 1-1-7, 1-1-2. 1-1-7, 1-1-1 would be 9-3. So we're assuming here that it's, what, 9... How does it work? 9-2-1? Something like that. There's an even card. There's an even round in there somewhere. So basically, the only rounds that Okoli didn't win are the ones that he was dropped in. It seems like they even gave him rounds that had points taken off in. I'm not really sure how it worked at all. I have no idea how they came to that, how that scorecard was come to. For me, I thought probably 8-4, Chris Billam-Smith. So 1-1-6, 1-1-2. Take away 5, we're at 1-1-6, 1-0-7. That gives you an idea of disparity between my scorecard and a drawn scorecard. Don't really see any justification for that whatsoever. Yeah, Lawrence Okoli, he left Eddie Earn, he went with Boxer, I think, who are now running on Sky. Obviously, his match room have gone over to DAZN. Don't think anyone's going to really want to touch him with a barge pole. He apparently has a rematch clause. Not sure how much of that will be dictated by his party, whether he'll be able to get it outside of Bournemouth or he'll be able to fight somewhere else. Might as well do it in Bournemouth, even though there was crowd trouble. Looked pretty darn good at that venue. But as the year goes on, if he doesn't get that rematch relatively quickly, outdoor venue, that's going to be off the table. And seemed to sell quite well. It's going to be way too big for the BIC, or something, which is another really good venue in Bournemouth that's been used recently for boxing and has worked really, really well. So you've got three venues there. You've got the Bournemouth O2, which used to be the Opera House, which is really small scale events, and you've got the BIC, which is a big concert hall, which has been used recently to great effect. And now obviously they're using the football stadium as well, which I was kind of dubious of. I thought there's no way they're going to sell tickets for this sort of fight. Cody's not a draw. I know Billam-Smith's a local guy, but I didn't think it was going to sell that well. But it looked to be pretty darn healthy in there, and aside from the crowd trouble, good atmosphere. Guy local to me, Joe Pigford, was thoroughly outclassed and stopped by Sam Eggington. Basically two sort of brawler types. Pigford, a really big puncher. I've seen that firsthand. Saw his debut back in the day. I've watched him spar close. Really top lad, Joe. It was a shame to see him go out like that. But Eggington was like, right, you're the new guy, you're the new face first action fighter. I've been doing this for a while and I've just got more nails to my game. And unfortunately, he picked Pigford apart and beat him to a standstill in was it the fifth or sixth round? Should have been stopped a bit sooner. But Eggington, it's weird with Eggington. He's had so many wars over the years, but he's still got more left in the tank, it seems. And Pigford, his career's been completely up and down in terms of activity. Gets back out. Put him into a good fight, really, really tantalising fight, but unfortunately was not the knockdown drag-out war we expected, and Eggington got the win in some style. Working our way down the weights, gone, cruiserweight, light middleweight, now down to featherweight, because both halves of last year's Combat Chronicles Fight of the Year were in action at featherweight. We had Michael Conlon fighting and Lee Wood fighting. Let's talk about Lee Wood first. I'm not going to talk too much about the Conlon fight. It was fun, but, less significant in my opinion, but fun all the same. And although they had more drama in the ring, I think certainly the Lee Wood Mauricio Lara rematch had way more drama outside of it. Now, a few things. Episode 41, I spoke about the first bout and might have mentioned it on there, but I know for a fact that definitely online I've been very against the idea of Lee Wood taking this immediate rematch. He was very adamant they wanted it. Now, he had no way of knowing, of course, that Mauricio Lara was going to completely botch the weight this week. I've heard a couple of conflicting pieces of information as to how heavy Lara actually was, but the British board would not allow him to weigh any more than 128 pounds. Belt, of course, featherweight title, set 126. So Wood made weight, titles on the line for him. Lara did not. And Lara's a guy who does rely on explosive moments, on big moments. We saw that in the first Lee Wood fight. We saw it in other bouts of his as well. But he is eye-catching. He is an explosive fighter. In this fight, he did very much look like a depleted version of that style of fighter. He did look drained, did look off. Lee Wood did what he does really, really well. What Lee Wood does not do well is he gets a little bit overzealous. He's quite straight on at times defensively. Offensively, he's very dynamic, but he can get caught walking in. He will often fall over just a little bit over his over his front foot and walk himself into a shot. And Belara was not really able to capitalise on that. And Wood, for the most part in this fight, was the matador. And actually, he went forward very, very well. My only problem with Lee Wood is he's got a wand of a left hand. Absolutely fantastic. But he does always use it to advance. I'd love to see him just stay on the end of that jab and not get himself into perilous situations. But wasn't really much of a factor in this one. Dominated the belt. Maybe I gave Lara one or two rounds. But, you know, Wood, that left hand's fantastic. Constantly fighting, constantly probing, constantly touching his opponent's lead glove. Level changing. You know, jab upstairs, downstairs, then walk you onto a right hand. Constantly doing this. As I say, the left hand does usually mean that he's going to step forward and try and throw that that right hand of his. But on this, we saw hooking off the jab as well. That jab, that omnipresent left hand, was what set up the right uppercut coming from underneath, which scored that second round knockdown. All the momentum was on Lee Wood's side. Technically brilliant offensively. He's never going to be a defensive savant, but what Lee Wiley and Ben Davidson have done to bring him along and add so many extra tools to his game. I do think that offensively, Lee Wood is brilliant. He's great to watch. Dangerous fighter. Fights out of his skin every time you see him. Has overachieved, in my opinion, based on what we saw of him early on in his career. He is truly a world level operator, in my opinion. He's not elite, but offensively, he's brilliant. I really do think he's a brilliant, dynamic, offensive fighter. And do you know what? He was right to take the rematch. He didn't know that Lara was going to be weight drained. Even if he was, he certainly looked off to me. And it plays into the, you know, not the narrative, but certainly based on the other information we've got, I think it sort of makes sense entirely that Lara was a bit off. But actually, what Lee Wood must have thought is, fuck, I saw enough moments in that first fight. If I didn't get caught those couple of times, I could do him. That confidence, I love it. And his team have gone, yeah, fuck it, let's go for it. And really, he won't punch perfect in this by any means, but got himself through the rare tough moments that he had, because he did clipped a couple of times, and, you know, just constantly gave Lara loads to think about, and, you know, kept it safe late on, stayed on his feet, done the job, clean win. He can now put that to bed. Lara will probably move up and wait. He can now say what so many others can't say, which is, I beat Lara, went back to the well, beat him clean, didn't get put on my arse. And he's got big fights coming up. He probably can fight Josh Warrington now in a big one, even though Warrington's not in a great run of form. Or he can fight the guy that's just splattered Michael Conlon and the previously beaten Josh Warrington.
Give a sense of turning the tide and stop the onslaughts of Lopez. Like that right hand. Yes, followed up by a solid body shot. Oh my goodness. From Conlon down and the towel has come in. He's gone straight in. They've sent it off. And they've put the towel in and Conlon is beaten. Lopez is the champion still. And instantly, as Conlon went down, Adam Booth hurled the towel into the ring. And he's on the canvas and doesn't really know where he is.
So yes, Luis Alberto Lopez of Mexico splattering Michael Conlon of Ireland in the fifth round of what was a fucking brilliant fight and will surely be vying for Fight of the Year honours in the End of the Year awards on this podcast. Don't think it'll win it, but it will certainly be an honourable mention at least. Really fun stuff. And we see the good and the bad about Conlon. You know, early on, he's actually pivoting, actually trying to get, you know, not let his man stay in front of him, hitting him with combos, using his southpaw stance to get underneath the lead elbow of Lopez, pivot off, and then not allow him to return fire. Very, very quickly devolves into a slugfest. And that's the problem with Conlon. He's not very slick. He wants to be an all-action brawler. He's got that world amateur championship pedigree, Olympic pedigree. But unfortunately, despite all the skills that he did have as an amateur, and, you know, he was never like a totally elusive slick boxer then, but now he is more like John Duddy. Makes the fun fights, but Adam Booth throwing the towel so quickly there, it tells me a few things. He knows his fighter. He knows he's done. And I wonder what the sparring's been like. Is this guy always getting in the wars? Conlon now has been, and I hate to use the word again, but he's been splattered now twice in a year. He was sparked in scary fashion, had to go to hospital after the 2022 Combat Chronicles Fight of the Year against Lee Wood, the aforementioned Lee Wood, knocked out of the ring. Horrendous knockout. amazing fight, great performance from Conlon, had his moments and was half of an absolute classic, a modern classic, an all-time classic. If you haven't seen that fight, go back and check it out. But in this one, you know, he has his moments. He absolutely does hurt Lopez. There is moments where he's, as I say, tucking that body shot underneath and coming back over the top, catching Lopez, stunning him. Lopez is a weird fighter, really awkward, sort of holds his feet a lot and just throws these really weird choppy shots. He's like me on the bag, but he's obviously very good at what he does, unlike me. He'll come underneath and then chop over the top, and he's just awkward, throws his shots with a really weird trajectory. It's hard to see his shots come in. You sort of never know when he's going to explode into this salvo of punches. Conlon just looks, you know, more classically trained. He's a sharper, really fast combination puncher. As I say, he is a quality pressure fighter, but he hasn't really got what's the best way of putting this? He ain't got the minerals to keep it up. Yeah, we saw it against Lee Wood, he eventually capitulated. We've seen it here against Lopez. He's been in other fights as well. And yeah, Lopez just stuck in there, took his licks, was happy to have Conlon in front of him, and eventually come underneath with the uppercut. And as you were from that clip, sort of against the run of play, because even though he'd had his moments and it hurt Conlon more than once and it backed him up, staggered him, etc., Conlon was having, in my opinion, more moments, but Lopez, his shots have seemed to have a bit more thunder behind them, and he's taking Conlon out there. I'd love to see Luis Alberto Lopez fight Lee Wood in the unification. I'm pretty sure that that could be arranged. I think it's a better fight. I think you haven't got to worry about Josh Warrington, who's with DAZN, and Lee Wood. Is Lee Wood with DAZN? Yeah, sure he is, yeah. They're both with DAZN, so they probably will make Lee Wood and Josh Warrington first, because, you know, they could probably do it at an outdoor stadium in Nottingham or Leeds. I think Lee Wood deserves, as champion and on the way better form, to get his choice of stadium. If he's going to fight in fucking football stadium in Nottingham, that would be fantastic. But at the same time, Luis Alberto Lopez, he's fought in Belfast now. He fought in Leeds against Warrington. He battered Isaac Lowe at York Hall. He's fought all over. He will gladly come over and fight in a unification. He's got the IBF and Lee Wood's got the WBA. I think stylistically is such an interesting one. As I said earlier, you know, Lee Wood's just so much more skilled, really, but he is hittable. You think that he'd be able to boss it behind that length, but he is hittable. And Lopez just can absorb big shots, which Lee Wood will throw. And I can just see him chopping in the wood. And I think we'll see a great, great fight between those two. Lopez has never been stopped, as far as I know. I've only seen, like, what, four or five of his fights now, all the ones since he started fighting over here recently. I never haven't really paid attention to his career before that, which is weird because, you know, back in the day when you... I mean, I was an MMA fan for years, but, you know, I was covering boxing more intensely. I was a kickboxing fan, but again, I was only really covering boxing. When you're trying to cover all the sports, and you're in your mid-30s, and you've got a full-time job, you know, you actually got to pay attention to, and you've got a missus and that, you just don't get a chance to keep up to date with every single fighter coming through like I used to. So, you know, if he were to, say, unify with Lee Wood, of course I'll go back and watch even more of his fights. But for now, really fun fighter. Definitely check out the Conlon fight. Brutal knockout. If the fight don't make the list, then that'll be right up there as finish of the year, later on in the year. Just a wonderful, wonderful shot. But Conlon, twice now he's been knocked out like that. I wonder how much he's got left. He must have had, over 100 amateur fights, if not a couple hundred. As I say, he was a top world-ranked amateur. Most people remember him getting robbed at the Olympics, of course, but... he got silver at the World Amateur Championships as well. So he was definitely a quality fighter. Never really was sold on him like some were. He got gold at the World Amateur Championships. Sorry. He got gold. I was never sold on him some were. I thought he was a quality amateur. But my biggest concern for him was, you know, I think he was a bantamweight as an amateur. He sort of come in, super bantamweight quite quickly, featherweight. He might have even fought over the limit. He looks quite... decently sized at featherweight, but I wonder whether he just can't hold the shots well there. So, and I think now, as a two, those kind of knockouts, they're big, big, heavy knockouts. That ain't being stopped by a body shot. That ain't being dropped a couple of times and eventually been pulled out. He's been absolutely sparked. Forget the towel being thrown in. He was out of it. Badly hurt. Two knockouts like that, and he must be, what, 31, 32 now, Conlon? I'm completely guessing. I'm going to check. Good guess, Kyle. He's 31. Not good. Not good at all. Maybe he can revitalise himself with a move down to super bantamweight. I'd love to see him fight Josh Warrington. There's a guy on a similarly bad run of form, and he's not a big puncher, Warrington. I'd love to see that. You know, these guys, have them fight each other, then the winner can fight the winner of the unification. That's what I'd like to see. It's almost certainly going to be Leewood versus Josh Warrington, though. And the thing is, again, like, we've got a couple of months to get that done, because if it's going to be a big outdoor stadium fight, say not Wembley, you know, Warrington in his prime certainly had a big sizable following, and Leewood, I think people are definitely going to be captivated by his story, and I think he could tell, you know, if we've just done Chris Billum-Smith and Lawrence Okolie in a fucking outdoor stadium in Bournemouth, we could do something with Leewood in Nottingham. Fucking right we can. I know loads of people like Leewood. But I'd rather see the unification. Lopez is fascinating. Really fascinating fighter. And yeah, I think, you know, featherweight, he's got Ray Vargas, Navarrete's just moved up. Probably a new A and Fulton are on the way to just destroy all of these guys. Not Fulton ain't going to destroy no one, but if a new A walks through Fulton, you better believe that he's going to walk through everyone at featherweight. So these guys better, you know, what's the phrase? Something like, make hay while the going's good? I've just made that up. Is that a phrase? Make hay while the sun shines. I knew what I meant. I don't really like, is that an idiom? Would that count as an, is that an idiom? Oh, it's a proverb, apparently. You wouldn't think I had an A-level in English, would you? But I don't study that shit anymore. Yeah. Fucking make your money while you can. I wouldn't be bothered at all if Leewood would fight Warrington coming off a loss, because I get it. I absolutely get it. You know, when are you going to be able to have a big sort of all-British domestic dust-up like that for a world title? But would much rather see him fight Lopez, and I reckon Lee would rather fight Lopez. I reckon he'd rather try and annex the IBF to his WBA, add another Mexican to the list. So, yeah, good weekend of boxing. The Okolie Billum-Smith is almost certainly the most notable, because it's just a weird fucking fight. And, you know, Okolie losing so widely was impressive from Billum-Smith's standpoint, because Okolie had all the pedigree, and also it was just mental from, yet, you know, we had all the controversy last week with Haney and Lomachenko, so check out Heavy Hands and the Patreon podcast for that, for my thoughts on that fight and the scorecard. But then we get this one here, which is just a complete fucking head scratcher. I described it as online as maybe the worst decision I've ever seen. I think the worst I have ever seen was Mijares versus Navarro from back in the day, where I think it was like 120-108 Navarro, and it was almost like the judge thought that Christian Mijares' name was Navarro, because he won like nearly the whole fucking fight and then wasn't credited with a single round. Like, that's how we're talking in terms of like terribly, terribly, terribly bad decisions. But with this one, it was more a case of, well, you're less likely to get Chris Billum-Smith and Lawrence Okolie mixed up for obvious reasons, but also, like, how the fuck do you come to that scorecard? I can kind of figure out the other way, maybe just blatant corruption or just a bit of a fucking stupid judge who's having a bad night, you know what I mean? Like, 120-108 Mijares, I might have understood, but the other way around, it's like, he must have got the name wrong. With this, it's like, how the fuck are you only going to give Chris Billum-Smith the rounds that he scored knockdowns in? Doesn't really make sense. So, yeah, just a complete head-scratcher. The fight was, like, not fun to watch for long stretches, because Okolie's negative style is so awful and tedious to watch. But at the same time, there were multiple knockdowns. Crowd was raucous. You know, Billum-Smith fought his fucking heart out. Okolie had his moments. There were times where you think, fuck me. Like, he says, like, oh, yeah, I smothered my work after the fight. Yeah, you did. You had moments where you were fucking lighting him up, but just a bizarre fucking fight. That made it entertaining, even though for much of it, it was basically unwatchable. So, the featherweights made up for it. Wood versus Lara 2, not at all really engaging to watch. Certainly when it became apparent that Lara was not going to do much. You know, definitely in retrospect, when I watched highlights this morning, after watching it live last night, there was not much of worth to take from it, because you know that actually, not really much of a fight. The performance and Leewood, definitely commendable. And Lopez versus Conlon, fucking fireworks. Great to watch. If you watch any of the three fights, highly recommend you watch that one. I'd hate to give you a dud recommendation, but hey, check them all out if you get the chance. Three quote-unquote world title fights, all featuring notable fighters, and all in all, good weekend of boxing. The follow-up on last weekend, there was some quality Muay Thai this week from Rajadam Nirmal. I'm going to wait until the semi-finals of that tournament to deep dive into it, because I've only had a chance to see one of the fights in full and then highlights of the others. So I'll be doing the fights myself and you a bit of a disservice by going into any detail. So let's wait until the semi-finals of that tournament, and then we'll talk about the tournament as a whole. No MMA to really shout home about this week, but you know, it was the road to UFC, fucking wild finishes galore. But sorry to say it, but you know, wake me up when these guys are notable fighters. Big news that Bellator and Rising 2 is happening. That's going to be great. Obviously, we'll be covering that. And it does appear that, as I said on the bonus podcast this week on the Patreon, yes, indeed, Terence Crawford and Errol Spence, his signed, sealed, and soon to be delivered. We're finally there. It's official. No more talking. It's fucking happening. So there'll be loads of coverage coming up. We've just got loads of fights coming up. It's just a bit of a quiet week in terms of really notable stuff. So hopefully you enjoyed this one. Head on over to the Patreon, www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. There will be a bonus episode hitting there tomorrow, and there was one last week as well. So pretty constant and consistent content over there. So check it out if you like this podcast, this episode on the regular feed. Hopefully you'll find more to like over there and can support me, which will of course help me bring you guys some more cool shit. So until the next episode, have a good one. We'll be back, well, whenever, I guess, but definitely on the Patreon very, very soon. So head on over there if you want to guarantee some more Combat Chronicles. Thanks for listening as always. It really is appreciated.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.